The Medal of Honor is the highest military decoration in the United States. Recipients have done the improbable, showing immense bravery and sacrifice in the name of something much bigger than themselves.
This medal is for the men who went down that day. It's for the families of those who didn't make it.
I'm J.R. Martinez. I'm a U.S. Army veteran myself, and I'm honored to tell you the stories of these heroes on the new season of Medal of Honor, Stories of Courage, from Pushkin Industries and iHeart Podcast. From Bud Day, who survived more than 5 years in the Vietnamese prison, to Alvin York, the most famous soldier of World War I. These are stories about people who have distinguished themselves by acts of valor, going above and beyond the call of duty. You'll hear about what they did, what it meant, and what their stories tell us about the nature of courage and sacrifice. Listen to Medal of Honor wherever you get your podcast.
At Breezeline, great connections come in pairs. Switch to fast, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month and get a free line for a year when you pair with Mobile. It's the perfect pair for the perfect price. Get the reliability you need and the value you want. Enjoy fast speeds for work or play. Connect at home or on the go and save every month. Don't miss this special offer on internet and mobile. Visit breezeline.com today.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. What if the traits you've been taught to suppress your entire career are actually the very qualities that separate those who get what they want from those who stay stuck waiting for recognition that never comes? Today in the show, Jenny Wood argues that most of us are living in what she calls an invisible cage created by an overabundance of caution, and that the biggest lie you've been told in your career is to keep your head down and let your work speak for itself. Jenny is a former Google executive who developed a career development program used by 56,000 people in nearly 100 countries. And she's the author of Wild Courage, Go After What You Want and Get It. In our conversation, Jenny explains how traits that have a negative rap can be used for positive ends that will advance your career. We discuss how being shameless, reckless, nosy, manipulative, obsessed, and more can help you overcome your success-hindering fears, take bolder action, and achieve your goals. After the show's over, check out our show notes at aom.is/wildcourage. All right, Jenny Wood, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Brett.
So you were a successful Google executive. While you were there, you also developed a career development program that helped employees advance their careers by learning how to advocate for themselves, stand out for the crowd. So you've made a career for yourself by being unapologetically ambitious, like going after what you want. Have you always been like that? Were you like that as a kid, or was there a moment in adulthood where that switch finally flipped and you're like, all right, I'm going to start turning my ambition into action?
Ooh, there was a moment, Brett. There was a moment, and it was in 2011 on the New York City subway when I was riding the subway home from work, and about 20 feet away from me stands this really good-looking guy. Gorgeous blue eyes, thick brown wavy hair, the whole works. And even though I wanted to talk to him, something held me back. You know, like things you would normally think about some stranger on the subway. What if he's a convicted felon? What if he's married? What if 100 people stare at me on this packed train? So I sit there, I do nothing while the train passes stop after stop after stop, and his life, frankly, passes me by. But I'm so taken by him that I make a deal with the universe. And I say, if he gets off at my stop, then maybe I'll try to strike up a conversation with him. And if not, say lovey. Well, he gets off at the next stop, which was not my stop. And just as the doors are about to close, I feel this wave of wild courage wash over me and push me out of my subway seat and off the train. I chase to catch up with him, tap him on the shoulder. I say, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you, but you were on my subway and I thought you were cute. You're wearing gloves, so I can't tell if you're wearing a wedding ring, but in the event that you're not married, any chance I could give you my business card? And then I wait for what feels like forever for him to take my card, thinking this was a terrible idea. But he does take the card. He calls the next day. We go on a date a week later, and we've now been married for 11 years with two small kids who are 9 and 7.
No, that's, I love that story. I love how you started your book off with that story, because that really captures the title of the book, Wild Courage. So, I mean, what were you like before that moment? Were you sort of just someone who played it safe, tried to stay in the background?
Yeah, I was a confident Google employee on the outside, but scared and timid on the inside, always worried about what my boss was going to think about me walking out of our Tuesday one-on-one, always concerned that nobody would forget that one client presentation I flubbed, always nervous about when I eventually had direct reports and indirect reports as a Google exec, what they thought about me and how they were going to score me as a leader at Google, because there's a lot of upward and sideways and downward feedback at Google. And it's funny, I gave a keynote to a Google team that happens to be led by the guy who hired me at Google almost 2 decades ago. And he's like, Jenny, it's so interesting and wonderful to see you come into your own, because when you first started, you had a hard time having a perspective. You had a hard time sharing your thoughts. I knew that you had smart ideas, but you were too nervous and timid and held back to share those out loud for business impact. And I was like, wow, it's so interesting, because sometimes I think people push back on me and they're like, it seems like you were just born this way, Jenny. You seem really confident. You could sell ice to Eskimos. And it was such an interesting moment when I was doing this talk and getting this feedback from the guy at Google who hired me to realize, like, yeah, I was not born this way. And you don't have to be either. You might not be a subway chaser, but wherever you are sitting right now, there is something that you want. And wild courage is what closes the gap between what you want and what you get. And it's this set of tools that help you go after those things and get them. And it can be learned. It is not an innate skill. It takes practice. It takes reps. It takes building the muscle of wild courage.
As you described yourself in the book before you made this jump to wild courage, you remind me of I was like this in high school too. Correct me if I'm wrong. This sort of describes you how you were in high school and college. Like, you worked hard. You were quietly ambitious. You kind of just like, I'm going to work really hard, do my best, and then I'll just wait for people to notice.
Yeah.
And then if people notice me, then okay, that's fine. But if they don't, I'm just going to stay in the background. I think there's a lot of people like that. They're really conscientious. They do good work, but they wait for people to notice before they actually put themselves out there.
Absolutely, I was like that. I would almost take it a step further and say that I was really hesitant to stand out, even to acknowledge my own ambitions or share them.
Yeah, you have this great line in the book that says, most existential anxiety in life isn't about a lack of ambition, but an overabundance of caution.
Mm-hmm.
See, the book's called Wild Courage. What makes wild courage wild?
Well, wild courage consists of 9 traits that create the bars of an invisible cage that keep you small, that keep you quiet, that keep you following instead of leading. And my goodness, do they raise eyebrows. They are weird, selfish, shameless, nosy, obsessed, manipulative, that's a spicy one, brutal, reckless, and bossy. And those are not traits we typically think we want to aspire to. So that is the wild piece of it.
Okay, so your traits of wild courage are weird, selfish, shameless, nosy, obsessed, manipulative, brutal, reckless, and bossy. And what you do in the book is you reclaim these words, which, you know, they typically have a bad rap, and you reframe them with new definitions and lay out how they can be used for positive ends. And you say people can use these traits to overcome the 3 fears you think hold people back. It's the fear of failure, the fear of uncertainty, and the fear of judgment of others. So let's talk about some of these traits. The first one is weird. This is all about standing out. Why is learning to stand out such an essential skill and trait to develop if you want success in life?
Yeah, well, I mean, the world is just too busy and competitive for you to be invisible and make a dent in your career or in your life. So weird is about having the courage to stand out and be authentic, because within your so-called weirdness lie your greatest strengths. So hone every ounce of weird you've got. And that might be what I call playing it hot, which is respectfully disagreeing with your boss in a one-on-one, or sitting in the front row of your VP's presentation, or being the first person to raise your hand and ask them a question. Or actually, you know, you referenced this program I started at Google called Own Your Career. That was kind of weird. I played it hot. I did not ask for any permission. This was not my full-time job. I ran an operations team that that sat between sales and engineering and helped drive billions of revenue for the company annually. But people would come to me for mentorship. And this guy came to me and he was asking, you know, it was like the one of the many people who came to me for mentorship and was asking, hey, how do you navigate entry level to executive here? And I was like, okay, let me just scale this. Let me write down 10 tips that made me successful here, everything from navigating politics to stakeholder management to influence skills to getting promoted. And I'll just put together like a quick training. I'm sure that, you know, maybe 30 people will come. Well, 2,000 people came to that first training, and that grew into Own Your Career, which was used by 56,000 people in nearly 100 countries. But here's the thing. I was playing it hot. I was being weird. I was not in HR. I was not in people operations. I just decided to go for it without asking for permission from anybody or running it up the flagpole only for it to die in committee, right, of approvals. I didn't ask HR. I didn't ask legal. I didn't ask comms. And then all of a sudden, I was writing emails that went to 56,000 people at Google. So it's because I played it hot. I just went for it and I begged forgiveness, not permission. And there are so many smart, talented people sitting on brilliant ideas that never see the light of day because they're waiting for permission or waiting for perfection, quite frankly. And they don't just start and put something out there like 10 bullets on a document, hoping that maybe, you know, 2 dozen people will come. And then it ends up being a lot bigger than that.
All right. So being weird is about embracing your quirks, sharpening them into strengths, standing out in a good way. It's all about leaning into what makes you unique. And then playing it hot is it's a stance towards life where you show up with your weirdness, with boldness and energy instead of, you know, trying to play it cool and blend in. There's risk with this though, with playing it hot, because people could just think you're weird in an off-putting way, or, you know, you might step on some toes. But the benefits will typically outweigh the risk.
Yeah, let me touch on that for a moment because this is critically important. When I was launching this book, you know, Kim Scott was a big mentor of mine. She's like, Jenny, this is your time to beg, right? This might fall a little bit more into the selfish or shameless trait, but she's like, this is your time to beg. I had built relationships with a lot of authors and influencers, and I asked maybe 100 of them to help promote the book, whether it was sharing it on social media or on their blog or if I could be on their podcast, or it's actually probably closer to 200, or whether they'd write a newsletter about it. And there was one very, very famous author. And if I said the name, I will not for their privacy, but if I said the name, every single one of you would know it. And this person not only said no, but also ended our friendship and our mentorship relationship. And man, did it sting. I lost sleep over it. This was just a couple days before a pub date, and it was a time when I needed to not be losing sleep. And it stung. But if I had used that rejection as an indication to just start playing it cool and not asking for help or not being weird or not shamelessly putting myself out there, then this book would not have been nearly as successful as it has been. And so even though the outcome wasn't what I would have wanted, and it really felt like a punch in the gut, and it still hurts to this day. It still hurts to be told no from someone you deeply respect and admire because you've played it too hot. But it doesn't mean that the decision was bad. It was just the outcome that wasn't ideal. And so I still carry that play it hot mentality with me because, you know, 80% of the other people said, yes, we'd be thrilled to help. And then 20% said no respectfully. And this was like the one outlier who said no in a way that was painful for me. But it's okay because we push past those painful moments and we keep doing great things.
Besides playing it hot, another way you suggest you can be more weird is sharpening elbows. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, this is an example of when I was at Google and the most senior leadership team, kind of the equivalent of the C-suite of this org of Google, was meeting in London to decide a reorg and the fates of the people below them. Now, the people below them, myself included, were not invited to London for the actual meetings, but lo and behold, a bunch of us showed up in London to rub elbows, as I call, like sharpen our elbows, to be in the same proximity, to have coffee chats, to be present. And again, like if you want to be invisible, you can, but it's not going to help your career because being in the same room, if you're not invited, you know, if you don't have a seat at the table, bring a folding chair, as they say. But I think just showing up makes a big difference. It's like the classic line, 80% is just showing up. And it was astonishing who decided to fly to London and who decided to not and what the outcomes looked like. Because politics are real, relationships are real. And again, it goes back to the biggest lie you've been told in your career is just keep your head down. Your work will speak for itself. It won't.
At the end of each chapter, you have a section of what you call trait traps. And this is how the quality you're talking about in that section can turn into a weakness. And for the weirdness section, you say the trait trap there is when you start thinking of weirdness as being rude, annoying, just obnoxious. So the takeaway for weird is that you want to be weird in a good way. Just by doing the things that other people aren't doing, doing things that might be unusual or unusually bold, you know, just standing out from the crowd, but it's in a good way. You're not being obnoxious about it. Let's talk about another trait, and that is selfish. Nobody wants to be known as selfish, but let's talk about this first. How can selflessness be harmful? Because I think that's a good way to start this question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you give everybody a leg up at your own expense, you'll end up getting trampled. So start showing up for yourself. I redefine this as the courage to be your own champion. And, you know, even when I was running the Own Your Career program, I feel like I took my eye off the ball on my core job a little bit. And I was almost over-delegating to the leaders who reported to me. And then I had one conversation with my manager who's basically like, Jenny, get your eye back on the ball on your core job. And then it even meant that I had to kind of reshift some of the priorities to either peers who I delegated to or direct reports, because I had to look out for myself. I needed to maintain a good performance score so that I could continue bringing this good work to the world. And it's tough. It's tough, especially as a leader, to be selfish and say, you know, my career matters too. But at the end of the day, I deeply believe that, you know, as much as your manager is supporting you and your career, they're going to put their career first. And they should, because if we're not showing up for ourselves, then who is? And for the parents out there, you know, you might say, oh, well, if I were to ask you the question, who's more important than you? Start showing up for yourself. And if you were to say, oh, well, my child is more important than I am, but does your child need a martyr who's exhausted and depleted and hungry and sleep deprived? Like, no, go to that yoga class, go to that golf, you know, Sunday regular session that you do with your buddies and take the time that you need so that you can replenish and show up for the people in your life in a thoughtful and intentional way.
All right. So being selfish actually allows you to serve better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, what does positive selfishness look like for you?
Well, it's saying yes to the big and no to the small, at least in a work context, but also in a life context. So what's big? The Q2 strategy project that your C-suite really cares about. What's big? Improving customer satisfaction by 12% quarter over quarter. Again, in a work context. What's small? Being the 18th person to reply all on the happy birthday Jimmy email. Give him a high five, you know, when you see him at the water fountain. What's small? Attending every single meeting where you neither add value nor derive value. And how often do we do that? And what's small? Being the person who always takes notes in the meeting or always raises your hand to lead the well-being pillar. Like, yes, these things are good for community, for culture building. Yes, it's nice to occasionally plan the company picnic for the summer. But if you did it the last several times, if you took notes the last several meetings, then those small actions constitute what I call nap work, not actually promotable. So avoid more than 10% nap work, because no one ever gets promoted for being responsive to email. And yes, do a little bit of it. But if you notice that you're dialing up to 30%, 40%, and granted, this stuff can be easy, it can be simple. Sometimes it avoids the big scary projects of, you know, the customer satisfaction increase. But if you do too much of it, it's just not going to serve you well. So I say, don't nap at the office, because you want to do the big work that moves the business, because what moves the business is what moves your career. And same thing in your life at home also, right? Like, what are the things that you need to respond to on a given day, and what are the small things you can avoid? And maybe it is not responding to every text that comes in, right?
Yeah, that nap work, I can see that can be a trap for people in their career, because often nap work, it's easy and it's concrete and it's actionable. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, I'm doing something.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, it doesn't really move the bottom line on Mm-mm. things. And so I can see someone, it can put someone in a position where, like, I just do so much for the company, no one appreciates what I do, but you're doing stuff that, you know, it's nice, but it's like not necessary.
Yeah. I mean, it invites more work, but it doesn't invite more responsibility.
Yeah. So say yes to the big, no to the small. But a lot of people have a hard time saying no. Any advice for people who have a hard time saying no to that sort of rinkadink stuff because it makes them feel bad?
Yeah. So two tools are the agenda avenger and the power postpone. Because nobody wants to say no and then feel like a jerk. But there are so many ways you can say no and not feel like a jerk. In fact, I do have a freebie if people want it. It's at itsjennywood.com/say no. It's 8 scripts, tools, tricks to say no to meetings, projects, and favors. Because We get them all the time and we feel guilty. We don't have the wild courage to say no. And then sometimes a yes turns into like 20 other yeses, right? It's like, can you do this quick thing? Okay, cool. Now can you, you know, schedule this thing as a result of it? Oh, we've got to reschedule it. Now we've got to, you know, inform this one person. So like one little yes can turn into 20 different yeses. But you can use the agenda avenger, which is, you know, let's say, for example, someone asks you to hop on a call. You could say, I'd love to get a better sense of, you know, what you want to cover. Could you send a quick agenda first? I mean, if you push back, and that's why it's the avenger, the agenda avenger, if you ask them for an agenda, they're going to have to think real hard if you really need to have that meeting. And by the time they put together that 3-5 point agenda, they might just realize that it can be solved over email, right? How many times have we been in a meeting that really should have been an email? And then another one is the power postpone. So I'm planning to take a sabbatical coming up here for 6 weeks. And so that's a natural power postpone where I say, I can't meet now, but I can meet in about 8 weeks. And then sometimes it just resolves itself. Or if they really, really want to have that meeting or have you on that project, then they can wait. But oftentimes it just disappears. And those are two of the 8 very practical tools I share with people to thoughtfully say no without feeling like a jerk.
Yeah, the asking for an agenda, I've used that a lot in my career. So I'll get people who will email me like, hey, you know, I got this thing. I'd love to hop on the phone to talk about how we can partner together. And it's like, what does that mean? Like, okay.
Right.
So I send an email like, hey, this sounds great. What are some concrete ideas you have right now on how we can partner? And then like, oh, I don't know. Okay, well, you know, once you have some ideas, maybe we can hop on the phone then. But when their ask is kind of vague, it's like, well, okay, I'm going to have you be a little more specific so we can figure out if there's actually something here for us to do.
Yeah, definitely. Or another version of it is, you know, I'd get tons of people who'd reach out to me and say, hey, you know, my nephew would love a job at Google, right? It's always someone's nephew would love a job at Google. Another strategy here is yes, if, or yes, when. Yes, we can do that if you put together 3 job recs that look interesting to you, or yes, we can do this when you send me your idea of like the perfect job or something like that. So again, it's similar to the agenda vendor. You're not specifically asking for an agenda, but you're saying, yes, we can do it if you do this or when you do that. So yes, if, or yes, when, to also see if that meeting really needs to happen.
Another tactic you have for being more selfish in a positive way is win, W-I-N-N. What's that?
I love this one. I'm so glad you're bringing it up. So this is play to win. What I need now, W-I-N-N, as you said. And this is about being selfish about how circumstances might change. And there's this wonderful story about a session singer for Pink Floyd named Claire Torrey. A session singer is someone who is hired for a very small fee to come in and sing backup vocals or something as part of a track for one individual song for a band. So in London, Claire Torrey came in. She was paid £30 to sing these backup vocals for The Great Gig in the Sky on a Pink Floyd album. And so she collected her £30 fee and went home and didn't even know that the song had made the album until it came out. Well, it turns out that album went 14 times platinum. A little bit more than, and her vocals are legendary. If you know the song, it makes the song. And so she played to win. She said, you know, what I need now is to sue Pink Floyd and ask for a significant part of the royalties and a songwriting credit. And then, you know, she was really smart and selfish to do that. And Pink Floyd was smart to settle out of court for an undisclosed sum. So, you know, what might that look like for you? Maybe your company has just gone through a reorg or layoffs and you're now doing the job of 2 people and you're overworked and overwhelmed and feel like you're underpaid. Well, what I need now might be giving yourself the advice that you might give to a friend, which is, put together 3 slides, go to your manager, explain the work that you're doing, ask for a new title, ask for a raise. And we selflessly say things like, oh, but I'm just happy to have a job. Or, you know, what about Alan and Sarah and Louisa? Like, they're doing hard work too. What about their raises? Well, being selfish is standing up for yourself. And sometimes what I need now is the permission we need to recognize that it's okay to ask for something when the circumstances have changed.
Yeah. I mean, companies or CEOs, they play to win.
Heck yeah, they do. And that's why they're so successful.
Yeah. You know, if they never think, well, you know, we promised this guy this job for a long time. It's like, well, okay, the situation now is like we're losing money and we had to make cuts to keep this company afloat. That's the situation now. So we got to make the cuts. I'm sorry. It's not personal or anything. They're playing to win.
Yeah. One of my best managers, Mike, said to me in a one-on-one when I was really being a workaholic and not taking any vacation, he's like, Jenny, you are capped out on vacation. When is your next vacation going to be? I'm worried you're going to burn out. And I said, I know, Mike, I'm just so passionate about this project and this new team. And I love Google so much. And he was like, I think about my saying this and like, what a ridiculous, it's not that Google's an amazing company. Like, don't get me wrong, but what a funny thing to say to justify me not taking vacation. And I will never forget his retort back. He said, Jenny, that is great, but I want you to remember that Google doesn't love you back. And just like you said, Brett, like they're going to be selfish. Any organization is going to be smartly selfish if there's a financial crisis and they have to have a RIF, a reduction in force, if they need to shift priorities and take a big project away from you, if they need to freeze hiring, if they need to pause promotions or give, you know, lower raises or bonuses, like they will be selfish left, right, and center. So you can be selfish too. But there's this power imbalance, right? Where, you know, we look to our companies or we think that our boss's boss has so much authority and that we can't ask for what we want. But the best leaders, the future leaders are the ones who ask for what they want because you're displaying future leadership skills.
Are there any trait traps with selfishness?
Yeah, I mean, you want to, with all these traits, be expanding the pie and not redividing the pie. So I do advise people to look for ways that are mutually beneficial as opposed to, you know, for example, when I needed to be a little bit more selfish about my career and kind of get my eye back on the ball, if I was going to insert myself more in a project that I had delegated to a peer or a direct report, I would think about something else that they could do that would bolster their profile as well.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. The very first article we published on The Art of Manliness back in 2008 and that kickstarted this whole thing was an article on how to shave with a safety razor. And I've been using a safety razor again. It's from Henson Razor. It's safety razor shaving for the 21st century. It gives you a smooth, clean, close shave with zero irritation. My face feels great afterwards, and the blades, they're dirt cheap, less than 10 cents each because you're using one of those safety razors. Henson isn't trying to sell you gimmicks. The safety razor is made in an aerospace machine shop in Canada, the same place that built parts for the Mars rover. The level of precision is incredible. The blade only extends 0.0013 inches past the shave plane, less than the thickness of a human hair. That control is what makes it so gentle on your skin. There's no subscriptions, no plastic waste, just a high quality tool that works. Go to hensonshaving.com/manliness and use code manliness to get a free pack of 100 blades with your razor, enough for 2 years of shaving. Yes, 2 years of shaving. hensonshaving.com/manliness, code manliness. Check it out today. And now back to the show. All right, let's talk about shameless. Sure. And shameless. This is all about leaning into your strengths and not being afraid of showcasing them. It's all about having some swagger.
Yeah.
What do you think holds people back from promoting themselves?
I mean, I think that this is the biggest challenge with wild courage. I do. I think that people feel insecure. They feel rife with imposter syndrome. They feel like they don't deserve it as much as somebody else. They feel like they don't have the skills that somebody else has. There was a moment in a meeting that I was leading where there were maybe 20 people in the room and this guy came in and he's like, this is a shameless plug, but I put together this spreadsheet that might help you. And he shared it over the group chat. The emojis go flying. The chat explodes. Oh my gosh, this is going to be so helpful. This is going to save me 20, 30 minutes every time I need to create this project proposal for clients. And yet he led with, this is a shameless plug. And it's like, what's the shame in that? You're sharing something useful and helpful and a time saver for people. And yet we hesitate to share our wins. And I think one of the most helpful tactics here is to make it consistent, make it a system. If, for example, you shared every Monday, what I call a shameless Monday email with your boss with four bullets, two things you're proud of that you did last week and two things you're excited about for next or for this coming week. That is so powerful. First of all, it makes it a lot easier to put together your performance review at the end of the quarter and your accomplishment bullets, but it also just systematizes talking about your wins and it becomes more natural. It becomes more of an update. There's a huge positive externality of then they might CC their boss, or if you're a leader, you could share this with your team and CC your own boss. And then you're sharing with your team your priorities, which people love to know what their boss is up to that day. So the Shameless Monday email can be really effective as you lean into your strengths and not be afraid to showcase them.
Yeah, I think that's a powerful idea because your boss has no clue what you're doing. He might have like a little bit of a clue, but he probably doesn't know everything. So this just makes it more explicit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You also talked about the power portfolio. What's that?
Oh, I love the power portfolio. So the power portfolio is made up of your power assets. And just like a financial portfolio, you want to have a mix of soft skills and hard skills, or of business skills and people skills, like you'd want to have a mix in your financial portfolio of stocks and bonds. So these are the three strengths you have, or the three things that you bring to the table that can move the business forward. So I had a coachee named Martina, and she came to me with three power assets. She said, mine are communication, organization, and supporting others on launches. And these were okay, but they needed tweaking because, again, we want a mix of business and people skills. So yes, people skills matter, but managers and leaders want to know what business problems you'll solve because that's what their boss is grading them on. So that's why you want to diversify your power portfolio and aim for a mix here. So we tweaked it. So communication became executive communication. Organization became project and program management, which she was phenomenal at. And supporting others on launches became go-to-market strategy. Again, same ideas, different word choice, higher impact, shameless, right? But it's just being more powerful in your language. And again, like organization versus project and program management does have a very different je ne sais quoi. To me, organization sounds weak. It sounds feminine. Not that that's a bad thing, but you know, in the context of wanting to show your leadership skills and show more of the value you bring to the customer, project and program management just sounds a lot more powerful. And so we strengthen them by doing that exercise. But even aside from your specific language choice, a lot of people, I think, don't know their strengths at all or their talents and can't articulate them in a bit of an elevator pitch. Like some people might just draw a blank if I say, what are the three things that, I mean, often I will say, execs draw a blank when I say, what are the three things you bring to your team? And they really have to think about it. So it requires writing down maybe 20 things that you think you are pretty good at, things you love to do as a child, things that, you know, you've helped move the business forward on in the past. It might require bringing them to a coach or a mentor or a boss and triangulating it with other people think, and then you can whittle it down to three.
And I imagine after you whittle it down to the three, you need to figure out what are some things that, like concrete things I can show that showcases that I have these traits, like be able to show that to people. Hey, I'm great at, you know, this thing. Here's what I've done.
Oh, absolutely. Like if you're talking about these in a resume or again, an accomplishment bullet, preparing for a performance review or promotion, you want to use what I call ROI, not the classic ROI return on investment, though this does give you return on career investment. It's role, objective, and impact. What was your role in this go-to-market strategy? What was the objective? You wanted to, you know, launch the product with, you know, 10 million users in the first year. And what was the impact? You exceeded that goal and launched it to 11 million users in the first year. So, and also double your numbers. In any context, double your numbers, or even going back to, and when I say double your numbers, I mean, you know, in that example, I used 10 million. Maybe you could say 10 million by day 90, like use physical numbers. It is so much more powerful. And they don't have to be fancy, like revenue growth percentage or actual dollars. It could be, I cut this email sequence down for onboarding new clients from 5 emails to 3, making it more efficient. Or I'm 70% of the way through the fall athleisure line competitive analysis, right? Even just saying I'm 70% or I cut this down from 5 emails to 3 has a big impact on showing the concrete, the tangible value that you bring to the table. So double your numbers anywhere you can, whether it's in your shameless Monday email or a resume or accomplishment bullets or your power portfolio when you're talking about your strengths in the specific situations with ROI where you demonstrated these power assets.
How are you being shameless with the promotion of this book that you're doing?
Well, a big part of promoting the book is having companies buy the book in bulk. So there are books that are sold one at a time and there are books that are sold 500 at a time. Because this book is so much about, it's about wild courage in all areas of life, but there's a bias toward professional wild courage and really thriving within your company, within your organization, and not saying, hey, go quit your job and, you know, be a solopreneur, be an entrepreneur. It's really helping you feel engaged, feel happy, feel successful, feel motivated within your organization, which companies should love and want to buy, right? So I think this has the potential to be the kind of book that people buy 500 at a time. So how am I being shameless? I recognized that opportunity and I sent about 300 emails to leaders, friends, acquaintances, you know, second degree connections, subject line, are you interested in buying 200 copies of Wild Courage? And then I put a bunch of details. I'd happy to do a 20-minute complimentary fireside chat if you did. And I sent the first 100 and Brett, I thought that by the end of the day, those checks would just be rolling in for those bulk purchases. But as it turns out, the budget is not always there. The timing's not always right. There was a lot of ghosting, a lot of rejection. So Shameless in this context is having the courage to just keep going despite all of that rejection. And this was different than the rejection of the one person who cut off our friendship. This was like rejection at scale because there were so many people. I mean, I probably didn't hear back from 90% of the people in that first 100. So what did I do? I tweaked the offering. Rather than 200 copies in the subject line, I put 50 copies. Rather than overwhelming them with too much information about the details of how this partnership could work and me coming to do a fireside chat, I whittled it down to just a few sentences. So you can use that rejection and tweak, dial your shamelessness up and down to what might better appeal to the audience.
Well, this kind of ties in nicely to one of the other traits, being reckless. Like you've been reckless with your being shameless.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. What does healthy recklessness look like?
Well, it's the courage to err on the side of action because better to learn from your mistakes than waste time predicting the consequences of every decision. Think fast and fearless. And if you're on the fence, do it. And for all of you overthinkers out there, for all of you pro-con list makers, and like me, left brain thinkers who are in a lot of analysis paralysis, just thinking about like, what's the worst that could happen, right? I mean, even leaving Google for me took a lot of recklessness. And it was hard for me to get to the point where I knew I wanted to leave. And that was a moment where I felt my eyes fluttering closed when I was driving my son back home from choir practice because I had just taken on too much. I had my day job. I was running the Own Your Career program. There was all this external interest that was budding about my work, including this book. And I was also trying to be a wife and a mom. It's like five roles. And I was exhausted. I was struggling with lowercase a anxiety. I was oftentimes up between 2 and 5 a.m. And I just was totally sleep deprived and physically, emotionally, and mentally unwell. And so I reached the moment where I felt my eyes closing as I was driving Ari home from choir that it was probably time to go. But it took me about 12 to 18 months to muster the courage to do it. And that's because I wasn't reckless enough. And so I think I was caught in truths and tales. Truths are fact. They're verifiable facts. You know, this microphone I'm speaking into is black. I'm, you know, holding a piece of paper in my hand. But tales are the stories we tell ourselves to make sense of the facts. And so part of recklessness is separating the truths from the tales. And so I really struggled with that leaving Google. You know, the tales I told myself were, I'm going to have no identity if I leave Google. Another tale, what if we run out of money and have to move out of our house in Boulder by all the trails that I love so dearly? Another tale I told myself is my parents are going to be disappointed in me because I'm the breadwinner for my family. But then when I broke it down to actual truths in that situation, a truth would be, yes, I'm not going to get a paycheck every other week with the Google logo on it. A truth would be, you know, I can find other ways to have a new identity. A truth would be my parents have always supported me and are supportive of me leaving Google as well. So that helps you be reckless when you separate the truths and the tales and really break it down to fact versus fiction.
So another thing you talk about in this reckless section is this REACT framework. What's that and how can that help you overcome failures so you can maintain that bias towards action?
Yeah, well, sometimes failures are not big, colossal, you know, I lost the project or I lost the deal. Sometimes a failure is just a moment that happens that's cringeworthy during the day. And we've all had those. And one of mine was when I sent an email intended for 6 people to, I think it was 23,000 people at the time. That's how big Own Your Career was at the time. And I sent it instead of to the volunteers working on Own Your Career, I sent it to the entire Own Your Career alias. And Brett, this was an unintelligible email. It was just a subject line that was 3 sentences long with nothing in the body. And it was a testimonial of someone who had said they loved the Own Your Career program and that they'd gotten promoted as a result of it. And so the subject line was just Titi Akinsanmi, which is the person's name, but it's a really unusual name. And then I had typos in the subject line, and this went to 23,000 people, including many in the Google C-suite. So I was mortified. Like I press send, and then I slowly dragged the mouse to the unsend, only to not get there in time. And here's what happened. So REACT is how I overcame that horrible moment of mini failure. It stands for recognize, empower, apologize, celebrate, and trust. Recognize that not everything you do will be perfect. E, empower yourself to own it quickly and clean it up. Take a deep breath. It happens to everyone. And so I really just had to like put on my big girl pants and say, I can clean it up. I can recover from this. And then I did. A is for apologize. I directly apologized to TT. She was not intending for her feedback about Own Your Career to get broadcast to 23,000 people. C is for celebrate. Celebrate the unexpected goodness that comes out of a mistake. I got hundreds of pings and emails back, and not a single one of them said, you jerk, I can't believe you distracted me with this nonsensical subject line. No, everybody was checking in on me. Everybody wanted to take care of me. Everybody wanted to help me and empathize with me. And they all said things like, Jenny, I promise nobody cares about this like you do. Nobody's paying attention. Everybody understands this. It happens to everyone. They were so empathetic. So that's celebrating the unexpected goodness that comes out of a mistake. And that's also the T, is trusting that your fellow employees will have your back. And by the way, the other part of C, celebrate the unexpected goodness, is I wrote up this React framework. I then shared it with the whole Own Your Career alias and said, here's how I recovered from this mistake. And it ended up being the most popular tip of all time that I had ever sent. So it just goes to show you that you can make lemonade out of any lemon. And that's the React framework.
All right. So reckless, just take more action, have a bias towards action, and you can overcome those little setbacks and failures. It's not a big deal. It's not going to be a career ender for you. Another trait is being nosy. And you, I love this section because you start off that section talking about how your grandmother was nosy and how that probably saved her life during World War II. What happened there?
Yeah, so my grandmother was in hiding during the Holocaust in Budapest, Hungary, and she left to get a bucket of water for the other people in hiding with her. And she walked down the street and somebody from the Arrow Cross Party, which was sort of the Nazi equivalent ruling party in Hungary, rounded up her and some fellow Jews at gunpoint. And they marched them to a building and they had them, you know, against a wall. And my bubby, my grandmother, I called her bubby, knew that there was no getting out of this. Like she was doomed. The options were basically she was going to get marched onto a train and taken to Auschwitz, like so many other people had, or she was going to have a summary execution and get shot right there against the wall. And there were literally dead bodies in the street when this was happening, as she told the story to me in Hollandale, Florida, at the age of 93, when we were recording her Holocaust survival stories. And her only option, she told me, was to get nosy. And so she asked the soldier, this scared, terrified, timid soldier, a question. And she asked, you know, what would happen if I were to step out of line? And she wasn't necessarily looking for the answer. She was looking for his reaction. And he answered with the Hungarian idiom, which I will translate to English, which equals, is the mademoiselle so stupid or just pretending to be? And it was a little bit of a jokey answer. She saw a lightness in his voice. He almost cracked a smile and she really saw his nervousness. And it made her realize that she had a small window here to step out of line because he didn't yell at her. He didn't, you know, hit her with the gun. He didn't cock the gun. And so just by being nosy, having the wild courage to ask a question, it was the only way she was able to survive that scrape. So she stepped out of line and started walking down the cobblestone street. And she said she remembered hearing the click of her heels every time she took a step as she just kind of slowly breathed in and breathed out and hoped that nothing would happen. And it didn't. And she returned back to the attic safely. And so she really only survived because of her nosiness, because she had the courage to ask a question.
So this is all about asking questions, is what it means to be nosy. I mean, why do you think people have a hard time asking questions in their career?
We think it makes us look stupid or uneducated or unknowledgeable, or think about how many times, you know, for those of you who work in an organization that has a ton of acronyms, right? You think, oh, well, it's too late. I'm already in this role for 4 months. I can't ask that basic question. I can't ask that simple question again. But nosy is the courage to get insatiably curious, because curiosity drowns out fear and pulls you toward what is most exciting to you. So use it as a compass. And curiosity shows leadership. It shows ambition. It's a great way to overcome nerves at a networking event rather than feeling like you have to impress somebody. Go ask them a bunch of what and how questions, like, what was the most interesting session for you so far? Or how long have you been in the industry and what brought you here? Or how have your peers been responding to these sessions? Or how are you using AI right now? Like, what and how questions are so powerful and they take the pressure off of you in any kind of new relationship or networking situation or a meeting with a mentor where you feel like you've got to be all buttoned up and prove yourself. Just start asking and start listening. And even the best leaders, you know, going back to the person who's a few months into the role and they're like, oh, I'm too far in to ask what that three-letter acronym stands for. But the leaders who we admire most are the ones who have the confidence, the shamelessness, the boldness, the recklessness to say, hey, what does PRT stand for on this slide? I just want to make sure that for everybody in the room who's new, we redefine that. And everyone like sighs a sigh of relief that somebody finally, you know, had the boldness to redefine that acronym of the thousands that are used at the company. And when it's a leader who does that, I really admire it.
You also talk about how you can use nosiness or asking questions to turn envy into a springboard to success. What does that look like?
Well, you know, we've all got those people in our life who we're jealous of. It could be a friend, it could be a colleague. And I say use envy as your engine and steal their blueprint. So, you know, there was someone named Molly who I just deeply admired. She was a peer of mine. We were always competing for promotions and I always thought she was like three times as good as I was. But instead of being jealous and having it create a scarcity mindset for me, I thought of it as an abundance mindset where I could learn from her. I could get deeply nosy and I could kind of like discover her recipe for XYZ skill. So she was really good at project management. And anytime we were launching a new program, she would have this awesome Gantt chart, which had all of the dates and the accomplishments that needed to happen over a 6-month period of time. She was really good at communicating next steps. She was really good at delegating. She would bold the person's name in each email and put a deadline for what needed to happen next. She would thank everybody and be very positive and empathetic. And so rather than just be jealous and say, oh, why am I not good at Molly? Like, I resent her. I just went to her and I said, Molly, could I do 3 20-minute sessions with you where you review some of these project management skills with me and I can basically steal your blueprint. And I would write down these things on an index card and I would put them by my desk and I would use her strategies. Or I did this with another manager, Ted, who was just such a phenomenal presenter and never said in his presentations. And so then I would gamify it for myself and I'd say, I'm going to count how many times Ted uses in a 10-minute presentation and I'm going to try to beat it. So again, rather than being jealous, I used envy as my engine and I would steal their blueprint. And that is rooted in being nosy. It's being curious versus jealous.
This reminded me of Plutarch, the famous Roman biographer, philosopher guy. He talks about two types of emotions. There's envy, where you see someone who's better than you and you just feel bad and you want to bring them down. And then he says the opposite of that is zeal. It's where you admire someone's excellence and then you want to imitate it.
I love that.
So curiosity, being nosy can lead to zeal instead of envy.
I love that.
I really like that.
I love that.
Let's talk about being manipulative. You had an instance where you used manipulation on a past AOM guest, and that's Vanessa Van Edwards. She talks about charisma. How did you manipulate Vanessa into helping you achieve one of your goals?
Yeah, well, I really wanted to meet Vanessa. Like we haven't talked about obsessed, but like I'm obsessed. I want to meet the best people. I want to do the best work. I want to help people in the most high impact way. And I knew that part of that was building those relationships with authors so that I could partner with them, you know, around time of book launch and also just learn from each other and enjoy each other's friendship and you know, mutual value exchange. So I was headed to Austin for some work meetings. Someone had just introduced Vanessa and me over email. And so I said, I'm going to be in Austin Thursday through Sunday. I would love to take you out for coffee. And she said, oh, what are the chances I'm actually going to be out of town those exact dates for a keynote? And so I think a lot of people would just take no for an answer and be like, womp, womp, okay, another time. And of course, another time never comes. But I wanted to capitalize on this opportunity. So I said, what time does your flight depart on Thursday? And she said, it departs at 3 p.m. Well, my flight was scheduled to get in later than that, but a quick little switcheroo flight change and $60 to Delta Airlines had me coming in before her flight so I could meet her. And I said, what are the chances I get in at 1 o'clock? And so what if we met right by your gate for coffee? So, you know, did I lie? Yeah, sure. Liar, liar, pants on fire. But I will stand behind that lie all day long that I wasn't actually originally getting in at 1 p.m. And maybe I even said I was getting in at 1 to just make sure it worked for her before I made the flight change. So I think I actually did lie about the time my flight landed before I made the change. But I tell you, $60 to meet Vanessa Van Edwards in person, it's a bargain at twice the price. And so we feel like everything has to be coincidental or just has to work out or fate. But man, I just believe that serendipity isn't found, it's made. And manipulative reclaimed is the courage to build influence through empathy and to build lasting relationships. Because whether you're selling a product, an idea, or yourself, the ability to win friends, allies, and supporters is all about mutual benefit. So figure out what people want and go get it for them. In fact, something happened this morning where I got an email from the person who ran the PR campaign for the book. And she said, actually, I got an email a couple weeks ago, but I totally forgot to respond. It said, hey, would you be willing to write a testimonial for me on LinkedIn? So I would call that nosy, right? That's great. And then I forgot to respond because I've had a lot going on. And then she followed up. I'd call this bossy. She said, hey, I hate to nudge you, but I'd really appreciate this review on LinkedIn. Any chance you could do that? And so what I think would have made it even more powerful is if she'd been manipulative and said, and by the way, I've drafted a couple sentences for you that you can tweak as you see fit. Because when I talk about manipulative and how, you know, it's all about finding mutual benefit and figuring out what people want and getting it for them, what I want is time back. So I love doing favors for people, but they take time. And so had she been manipulative and said, I've already written it for you, that gives me what I want, which is time back, and makes it a lot easier for me to say yes. So I did say yes, but now I have to do the work. And, you know, it's still something I have to add to my to-do list. So that's where manipulative can be such a good thing and win-win and expand the pie, whether you're changing your flight to meet somebody because relationships should be, you know, high reward, but also high investment, or asking someone to do a quick favor for you like my PR person did today.
Yeah. So being manipulative, it's all about just being influential. That's what it's all about. And your definition of just being influential is like, you know, thinking win-win, finding out how you can get what you want and need, and while at the same time delivering what someone else needs and wants. It reminds me of this famous quote from Dwight Eisenhower about leadership. And he said, leadership is the art of getting someone else to do something you want done because he wants to do it.
Oh my gosh, that's so beautiful.
Manipulative, but like that's just leadership. That's being influential.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last one, you talked about obsessed. You're obsessed with meeting Vanessa Van Edward. That's another one of your traits of wild courage. What does positive obsession look like?
Well, it's pushing, persisting, performing, because frankly, none of these traits will serve you if you don't learn to deliver, not for some company, but to achieve your own ambitions. So obsessed for me was I wanted a job at Google in 2006. I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I submitted my application online having no clue what the job was that I submitted it for. But I discovered there was maybe sort of possibly a formatting funkiness when I uploaded my resume, and whether there was or wasn't, when I didn't hear back from Google, I used that as an opportunity to print out that resume on a piece of paper and hop in my mom's 10-year-old Honda stick shift and drive to the Google office and sit there on the couch until someone came out and talked to me. And I remember the receptionist, it was a shared office space, was like, no, it's not really protocol for Googlers to come out and talk to you. You can drop the resume here. And I just like firm as a tree, rooted to the ground, you know, with my smile kind of like cheeks quivering as I kept that smile on. I was professionally persistent and said, oh, it's okay. I'll wait. I really do need to talk to somebody because there was a problem with my resume. And there's this study that says people defer to because. It was a study about people standing in line to make Xerox copies. And someone from the back went to the front and said, I need to go to the front of the line because I need to make copies. Just because they said the word because, they were more likely to be let into the line, even though of course everyone was there to make copies. But the research suggests that people defer to the word because XYZ. So I said, because there was a problem with my resume, I need to speak to someone. And eventually someone named Elizabeth came out and I talked a little bit about how I had just come back from working abroad and backpacking through South America, which I understood were very googly, you know, skills or things that people did to be kind of well-rounded and global citizens. And then and only then did I hear back from Google once I showed up. Actually, not even then. I didn't hear back. I didn't get her business card. And then I tried every single permutation and combination of first initial, last name, last name, just last name at google.com. Her name was Elizabeth Kelleher. So I emailed E. Kelleher, Elizabeth Kelleher, Liz Kelleher, you know, Elizabeth at google.com. And then finally I found the right combination. And when I followed up, I heard back. So that is my flavor of obsessed. And it's okay to be obsessed. It's okay to stick your neck out. It's okay to show that you want something deeply because people like enthusiasm. People like energy. People like positivity. And that's what I was trying to show because it didn't work just submitting my application online. Silly protocols and rules are there to deter the deterrable, but I just decided I was going to be undeterred and I got the job. And here we are almost 20 years later.
Yeah, you got to play it hot. Don't play it cool.
Yes, definitely.
So we've talked about these different traits. Is there one you think that people would get the most benefit from working on, or like the one that people struggle with the most, that if they started working on today, they'd see a lot of ROI?
I think Shameless. You know, I think there's just a lot of change in the world right now, a lot of economic uncertainty, a lot of change with, you know, the onset of AI, a lot of layoffs, a lot of reorgs. And that's hard. You know, there's this moment where my husband and I were living with my grandmother on her pullout couch in Manhattan while we were job hunting. And John shared some unfortunate news. We sat down to dinner. He said, I've been part of a major company restructure and I got laid off today. Well, I'm crushed as a newlywed, but I look across the table at Grandma Lila, who was like a total spitfire at 4'10" and 90 pounds. She was not just shameless. She was unstoppable. And she said, John, no is just an opening offer. Don't sign the paperwork. And John and I look at each other trying to silently communicate what we're thinking. And then finally, John sighs and says, I think a layoff is like a one-sided thing, Grandma. They say, you don't work here anymore. And I say, okay. And that's when Grandma Lila sighs and says, well, sure, it would be more comfortable to take no for an answer, but don't let fear shape your decision. Don't let shame shape your decision. You both want something, right? They want to get stuff done even though they can't afford to pay you. And you want a job because it's easier to get a job when you have a job. So finally, John relents. And the next day he goes to his VP and he half-heartedly offers to stay on for 10% time and pay while he job hunts. And shockingly, they accept. Now, I'm not sharing this as some influence tactic per se. The point is Grandma Lila's lesson. Don't let fear, don't let shame shape your decisions. Get shameless.
Yeah, and it worked out for your husband because he got some time off. He had a little money to live on, kept his benefits. And then a few months later, after this crisis that this company was going through, he kind of abated, the company hired him back full time. And it was all because he's willing to do something we think of as a bad thing, to be shameless. Like he had to be uncomfortable and ask for something that apparently wasn't an option. Well, Jenny, this has been a great conversation. Where can people go to learn more about you and your work?
Well, the book's available anywhere, electronic, you know, ebook, audiobook, hardcover, Amazon, anywhere books are sold. And then you can find me on itsjennywood.com. And I love helping organizations with keynotes. I love helping execs through one-on-one coaching. I do some small group coaching, and I would love to be in touch and help you find your wild courage wherever you are and whatever you are chasing.
Fantastic. Well, Jenny Wood, thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Brett.
My guest today was Jenny Wood. She's the author of the book, Wild Courage. It's available on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. You can find more information about her work at her website, itsjennywood.com. Also, check out our show notes at aom.is/wildcourage, where you find links to resources. We delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the AOM podcast. Make sure to check out our website at artofmanliness.com, where you find our podcast archives, as well as thousands of articles that we've written over the years about pretty much anything you think of. And if you haven't done so already, I'd appreciate it if you take 1 minute to give us a little podcast or Spotify. It helps out a lot. And if you've done that already, thank you. Please consider sharing the show with a friend or family member who you think gets something out of it. As always, thank you for the continued support. Until next time, it's Brett McKay, reminding you to listen to the AOM podcast with Put What You've Heard Into Action.
The Medal of Honor is the highest military decoration in the United States. Recipients have done the improbable, showing immense bravery and sacrifice in the name of something much bigger than themselves.
This medal is for the man who went down that day. It's for the families of those who didn't make it.
I'm J.R. Martinez. I'm a U.S. Army veteran myself, and I'm honored to tell you the stories of these heroes on the new season of Medal of Honor, Stories of Courage, from Pushkin Industries and iHeart Podcast. From Bud Day, who survived more than 5 years in the Vietnamese prison, to Alvin York, the most famous soldier of World War I. These are stories about people who have distinguished themselves by acts of valor, going above and beyond the call of duty. You'll hear about what they did, what it meant, and what their stories tell us about the nature of courage and sacrifice. Listen to Medal of Honor wherever you get your podcast.
You set the gold standard for your business. Your website should do the same. Wix puts you at the helm so you can enjoy the creative freedom of designing your site just the way you want. Want someone to bounce your ideas off? Talk with AI to create a beautiful site together. Whatever your business, manage it from one place and tie it all together with a personalized domain name. Gear up for success with a brand that says you best. You can do it yourself on Wix.